This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Sometimes you hear that music, you know the day, you just want to sing Cinco de Mayo. You know.
There's a song of Cinco de Mayo?
Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, you know that one.
Yeah, we all know that one. That's a great song. And I'm glad that does he get royal? Does Darren get royalties for us playing it? I hope so, because that's an original song that he made up. So happy to have Darren Jackson on the show here on The Score. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You can go check it out at alpamonteford.com. White Sox color analyst Darren DJ Jackson joining me here on The Score. DJ, how are you, man?
Lawrence, I'm doing well, my friend. Thank you for asking. How you been?
I'm hanging in there. You know, it's been a very interesting and weird and sometimes saddening few months, but I'm doing the best that I can, just like everybody else. And I wanted to ask you about it, because in the middle of all of this that's been going on with us being in our homes and there being a pandemic going on, we lost one of our friends, and Ed Farmer. And I don't know if anyone was as close to him outside of his family as you were. And I know that you took a lot of time to try and figure out how you felt about this, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate you jumping on and talking with me about it now, because I'm sure it doesn't sting any less than it did on April 1st. But what are the things that you've taken away from being partnered up and being friends with Ed Farmer?
You know what, Lawrence? I think, just like you and so many other people that spent time with Ed, I think the memories that he just created with each individual. I mean, he just had a different relationship with everybody that he came across. And with me, he and I were like brothers. Some people would say we were like an old married couple up there in the booth, but we had a little act. We'd have a little fun. We'd pick on each other. We did our things. We'd get together with people, and you knew better, but we'd get together with people, and they said, "Do you guys even like each other?" And then they'd spend time with us, and they go, "Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me? These guys are best friends." But yeah, the association with Ed and me, you know, it's so memorable. There's no way that I haven't had a day that I haven't thought about something interesting, funny, or angering about Ed that we did together. And it'd be just little things. So let's give you a story. Ed and I are walking down the street from having lunch one day in Toronto. And next thing you know, he's walking at a good clip. I'm walking with him, and somebody passed us walking. He goes, "Oh, I don't think so," and off. He starts racing the person down the street in a speed walk contest that the person didn't even know he was in. And I got back to the hotel. He was waiting in the lobby. I go, "What's wrong with you?" And he just said, "I won." I just said, "That's it." I said, "You got to let the other people know they're in the race too, Ed. It's not just you." So this was day in and day out kind of thing that happened, spending time with Ed, and it'll never be forgotten.
I love what you were saying about how if people aren't used to it, they're like, "Wow, do those two guys like each other?" And I actually think that it plays on the radio like that too, where people are listening to you guys, and if they just catch like 20 seconds of it, like, "Do these guys like each other?" But if they listen for a minute, you go, "Oh my God, they're like best friends, and it's disgusting how much they love each other."
Well, that's it. And you know what? It's just so many different things. I can think of the times where Ed just would meet people anywhere we were, whether it be standing on a street corner, walking down the street, on a BART in San Francisco, anywhere. He created new fan bases for the White Sox. He'd see somebody with an Oakland A's hat. Next thing you know, it's, I played for the A's. I'm with the White Sox now. The A's stink. Next thing you know, he's converted them. He's got them in our booth when they're at a game in Oakland. I'm like going, how about this guy? I mean, he created so many White Sox fans across this nation. If they already had their favorite team, at least their second favorite team was always going to be the Sox, and that's Ed Farmer to a T.
How is he able to do that thing that Ed does, where he kind of knows everybody? And I don't know if I've ever met someone like him who, no matter what you mention, no matter what city you go to, he legitimately has friends that are going to be invited up to the booth or a memory attached to it. How did he do that?
Well, this is it. I mean, through so many different variations of this guy, he'd be in a lobby and he'd see somebody and he'd just start talking to him. Or literally we could go out to a driving range on a road trip and he'd see somebody and start talking to him. This guy knows somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody. And that was his whole world of just saying hello and talking to people, making friends, inviting them into his world, which opened up a world for him through these people. It was just a web that never ended. It was something that was pretty impressive, but at the same time, exhausting to be around, because I'd look at him and go, man, I can't keep up with you. I can't do what you do all day. You're going, you're meeting people, you're talking to people. And it was sincere. It wasn't as if he was just doing it to create a web of friends that he can have some kind of connection to get what he wanted. That wasn't it. It was more he was doing something for them. And if it opened a door that was going to allow others to enjoy it as well, fine. Because he would get a door open at a car dealership. He didn't want the car. But next thing you know, somebody's calling him saying, hey, you know anybody that knows where I can get a car? He goes, oh, I just met this guy. I put you in touch with him. Those are the things he did.
What's the most random connection that you saw play out while you and Ed were partnered up?
The most random would be there was a time in New York where Ed had this old 308 GTS Ferrari. And somehow he decided when we went out to New York that he was going to go meet this Ferrari guy, this guy that owned a Ferrari dealership across the state line in Jersey. And next thing you know, we're over at a Ferrari dealership. Nino is sitting there saying, yeah, come on, you want to take this Ferrari for a drive, Ed? He just met the guy. It just went by us showing up. And I'm going, okay, wait a minute. Are we really just at a Ferrari dealership? Ed's talking to the guy. They're driving around. And next thing you know, the guy's in our booth, giving us Ferrari memorabilia, shirts, hats, all this. We meet his wife, his kids. They become like family. And I'm like going, I don't know how I'm sitting here knowing a guy in New Jersey that owns a Ferrari place that's giving him a Ferrari stuff. And I'm just sitting there going, okay, I've got a new friend. I mean, that's the kind of random stuff where I just go in. Ed would talk me into going and spending time with people like that. But it was endless. It just kept going on day in and day out, anywhere we were, where he wanted to go do something. And I would just say, fine, I'll keep you company. But by doing that, it kind of changed my world and opened up some doors that I never would have done without him.
White Sox color analyst Darren Jackson joining me here on The Score. What do you think Ed's impact on broadcast was for White Sox fans?
Well, I think what he imparted mostly was the fact that he was a true Chicagoan. Anybody and everybody that listened to a broadcast from Ed Farmer knew where his roots lied. It lied on the south side of Chicago. It lied with the White Sox. It lied with playing for the White Sox, working for the White Sox, for being a good friend of the chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf. All these things, I think everybody really could take away that Ed Farmer was truly bleeding, you know, White Sox black. I mean, it just the way he was, you could not know anything more than the fact he was as loyal as they came to his organization and to his city. So I think for Ed, if anything he's ever going to be remembered, is that he is a true Chicagoan and nothing else.
I love that he would give you room and also that you both would follow up. Like if I'm listening to a broadcast and you explain what happened on a play, Ed can give you an experience that he had, or he'll ask you, well, hey, DJ, when have you been in a situation like that? That type of courtesy from the play-by-play guy, I think, is really important in forging a relationship that's good for the listener.
Well, you're right. You know, he and I went back and forth having our fun with the pitcher angle and the batter angle and the defender angle, all that stuff. And we had fun with that. But you're right. Once we really got into a good game, a good broadcast, Ed was great at making sure he gave you the game accurately and exciting fashion. But he made sure that I was keyed up to go ahead and break down what had just happened. That was his most important thing up in the booth, was to always try and tee me up and make sure that I was set in a position to where I can excel at what I could do as a broadcaster. So Ed Farmer, to me, working with him, not only were we best friends and we had so much fun, it was also educational and very generous of what he would always do with me up in the booth.
Would he ever let you, like, off the hook as far as, like, you guys are traveling together? Were there ever days where you were like, you know what, Ed, I can't go on the ride today. I'm just going to have dinner and read my notes and get ready for the game. Or did you always go on the ride?
No, there's no way. Lawrence, I couldn't keep up with him. I'd look at him and I'd say that, man, I cannot keep up with you. You're on your own. I couldn't do it. We'd get up, we'd work out if we were on a road trip in the gym, and I was usually in there before him. I'd see him walking in before I'd leave, and then next thing you know, we're having breakfast. Then he's saying, okay, today, later, we got the off day on the road. We're going to go do this. I go, no, you're on your own, my friend. You're going down to see the play off Broadway. You're going to see your friends. Today, I am taking it easy. I'm taking a walk through the city. And I had to do that multiple times because literally, physically and mentally, I could not keep up with him. I don't know anybody that really could. And most people that spent day in and day out with Ed realize there's no way. They could do it for a day, they could do it for a couple of days, but you just couldn't do it every day. It was too exhausting.
DJ, do you think we're going to have baseball this season?
Man, that's like me trying to pick a World Series winner nowadays. I don't even think about that anymore. There's been so many random teams that have won World Series out of nowhere that I would have never thought. Trying to predict if we're actually going to play this year, I feel the same way. There's just no way at any moment can I say, yes, we're going to play, no, we're not going to play. And one thing I have done, I've made sure to just stay back and let the people that are in touch with MLB and the people that are in touch with the negotiations contact me and tell me what's happening. Because from there, I don't want to even speculate. I don't even want to try and think if we're going to. Obviously, we're coming to a date where we have to kind of figure out, is it officially done, or are we going to make this work? But it's really closing in on us, as you well know.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what I was doing before you came on? I was looking at some statistics. I was looking specifically at the 1994 season of one Darren Jackson. And let me tell you, that guy right there was an 817 OPS player. He is 2.7 WAR that season before things broke bad.
That was a transitioning season for me, let me say that. I went from one type of offensive player to a different one because I got to work with Walt Reniac and Robin Ventura, Ozzie Guillen, Frank Thomas, all these players that kept me on a track that was put in front of me. They said, this is the way we're going to go. This is the approach we're going to have. And every day they made me focus on being a better hitter than just a certain type of hitter, of Deadpool hitter that I was prior to that, and they made me better. And I was able to carry that on for the few years that I played after that. I was able to continue to be a much better, productive hitter using the whole field. So that guy in 94 learned right in the middle of his major league career how to become a better hitter, and that's always proven to me. When people are a certain type of player, they keep hitting into the shift, they do this, and they don't want to make adjustments, it drives me crazy because I'm a guy that went from being a dead pull hitter almost 6 years into the major leagues to using the whole field in one spring training. So nobody's going to tell me it can't be done because I was nobody special to learning how, because somebody helped me, how to become a better player. So when I see guys so stubborn and unable to make the adjustments that are needed, there's ways to get it done. As long as the communication's the right way and you receive it, you can get better as a player. And that's what happened with me in 94.
I felt like that team could have won the World Series. Do you guys feel like you guys could have won the World Series?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we can sit there and throw darts at the board all day long and say, yeah, we could have been this or that. But my comparison is this. I spent several months with the Toronto Blue Jays in 1993 and how that team was built and how good this team was going on to win a World Series against the Phillies in 93. Well, when I got to the White Sox in 94, I saw the same similarities, strengths, And I realized probably a better pitching staff the White Sox had than the Blue Jays started out. But, man, I looked at that and I go, well, this team is as good, if not better, than the Blue Jays were in 93. I don't see why this team could not win at all. And then come around August, there's no more baseball and that's that. The dream ended, but I do know that team, to me, was every bit as good, if not better, than the Blue Jays of 93.
DJ, we've just come off this documentary on Jordan, The Last Dance, and they spent a lot of time talking about him playing baseball. What do you remember from all of that?
You know, it was my first year coming to the White Sox. So I was coming in on a non-roster invite from Ron Shuler as a general manager. He said, hey, all you got to do is prove you're healthy, because I had health issues in 93. He said, prove you're healthy and you'll make the team. That's not an issue. So I came to spring training, standing out there in the outfield day in and day out with Michael Jordan, who was trying to learn how to play baseball at a high level, and he hadn't played since high school. And I sat out there day in and day out in right field with Michael talking baseball, trying to show him little tiny things, how to throw the ball into the base the right way, lead with this, do that, field the ball out in front, do it. These little things. Didn't talk to him about hitting much because he had enough going on. He put the work in with his hitting to be the best that he could be. But anything that had to do with working in the outfield, he and I spent a lot of time out there, and I enjoyed the time. Now, I think the most impressive thing about Michael in that time that I saw is his dedication and hard work, because obviously, you know, he's a great basketball player. Is he coming in here as a sideshow just to say, hey, I want to play baseball? No, this is a guy that came in actually thinking, I want to be a Major League Baseball player, and I'll do everything and anything it takes to get there. He put more work in than anybody that showed up in spring training in 94. Obviously, he had to. He hadn't played baseball. But that's only because he really made that an attempt to try and play professional baseball. It wasn't a sideshow. He wanted to play. And I was so impressed. This was one thing that impressed me the most. When he got into a game and he put a bat on a ball from a Major League Baseball pitcher, I sat there and go, I can't believe this guy's actually making contact with a Major League pitcher. That blew me away more than anything. And to this day, still one of the greatest things, if you think about it, Michael Jordan hitting a curveball from a Roy Halladay or anybody else, and you're sitting there saying, how could he have done that? This guy should have been in the dirt, scared to death he was going to get hit in the face with the baseball. Not the case. It tells you about his tenacity and hard work and his true athleticism. So I enjoyed the time. And if I ever bump into Michael, which I haven't seen him in years, you know, I gladly sit there and smile and say, hey, I remember those days of us out there in the outfield, and I'm sure he would as well.
Weren't you the run that scored in the crosstown on his double?
Yeah. Yes, I was. I was glad he got to do that for the city of Chicago, for Michael. I mean, obviously it's good marketing, good PR work to bring him up there, but I was so happy that he got to play baseball in a Major League Stadium. And you know what? The city of Chicago appreciated it, and it's given us a story right now to talk about. So more power to Michael.
DJ, I appreciate the time, and thank you so much for sharing the stories about Ed and making a point to get back with us, because you're a man of your word. So I appreciate you jumping on and telling great stories about our friend.
Yeah, you know it. I appreciate the time, Lawrence, and our friendship we've had over the years. So, you know, I'm here for you. And thank you for kind of understanding that right after the whole thing, that I just needed to step back a little bit. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And I hope that I'm hearing you call baseball soon. That would make me very happy.
I hope so. We all need to get back and have our summer sport back. So fingers crossed.
Yes. And this could be a really good year for the White Sox. So a big thanks to Darren Jackson for being on the show. And I'm so glad we got to talk to him, and he got the Ferrari story. I hadn't heard that one. That's a new one on me. Herbie, make sure that we have that forever. Back after this on The Score.
Hey, it's Danny Mac from the McNeil and Parkin Show. Being live and local with 670 The Score is more important right now than ever. So as America adjusts to a new work-at-home environment during this COVID-19 crisis, trust us to keep you informed, entertained, and occasionally make you laugh a little bit during these uncertain times. Just tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score from radio.com and stream The Score live from your smart player instantly. 670thescore.com, live and local, a radio.com sports station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.